Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Head to patreon.com/chasingEarhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her navigator, Fred Noonan, disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. 80 years later, all over the world, lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to the Chasing Earhart Podcast.
When I was a young girl, I thought to myself, when I would be in geography class and I'd read about Africa and India and even some states in the United States, I thought, why am I here? Why am I learning these names? Why am I learning about the world? I have no intentions of flying or ever going anywhere. And again, to my surprise, I was able to fly around the world. It's been such an amazing adventure, and I got to meet so many cool kids just like you. I've met kids from Greece, from Afghanistan, from India, from Australia. They all love the same things that you love, and they all have the same beautiful smiles as you do, and aspirations and ideas, and it was cool to introduce STEM to them.
After 145 days, 22 countries visited across 5 continents, and 32 outreach events inspiring more than 3,000 young boys and girls, Shasta Ways completed her global solo flight on October 4th, 2017, returning to Daytona Beach International Airport to mark the completion of this historic circumnavigation for STEM and aviation education. At the age of 30, Shasta is the youngest woman to fly solo around the world in a single-engine aircraft. On the 42nd episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, Shasta joins us via Zoom to discuss her career thus far as an aviatrix, the role Amelia Earhart plays in the lives of women all over the world, the formation and ongoing work that Dream Soar is engaging in on behalf of STEM, and her unexpected role as an ambassador of hope for people all over the world. I can only think of one other instance when I struggled for words to describe a Chasing Earhart project guest, and that was back when Abigail Harrison, professionally known as Astronaut Abby, was on the show. I believe that was episode 7. And that brings us to now, episode 42. There are a lot of words that you could use to describe the woman that is my guest tonight. She's an aviator, and she's an advocate of STEM and the founder of Dream Soar, which is a wildly popular 501c3. She's an inspiration to countless children and young adults all around the world, and perhaps most importantly, she is what I like to call an ambassador of hope, something that we here at Chasing Earhart know a little bit about. Her name is Shasta Ways, and she is now officially a Chasing Earhart Project guest. Shasta, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your incredibly busy schedule to be here with me tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
So now, before we go sort of full tilt and dive in here, I want to get a little bit of housekeeping out of the way. But tonight, we're going to do that housekeeping a little bit differently than we normally do. I want to start with a question that has been a very big source of inspiration for young people all over the world when it comes to your story. Can you tell everybody a little bit about your beginning? Where were you born?
So I'm originally from Afghanistan. I was born in 1987, which was the peak of the Afghan-Soviet war. And my family, so my mom, my dad, my grandparents, my aunt and uncle, in Kabul, there was just so much turmoil that was going on. That's where I was born, in a refugee camp. And about 4 or 5 months later, my family had this opportunity to come to America as refugees to flee the Afghan-Soviet war that was taking place in Afghanistan. So I'm originally from Afghanistan, and a lot of people, they have an idea of what a typical Afghani girl looks like. And when they see me, they're a bit surprised. And I also have to say, English is not my first language. It's my third language. I've definitely become more Americanized, but my beginning, I come from Afghanistan, born in a refugee camp, and, you know, that's where it all started.
And that is the precursor. Now we jump into the question that we usually start the podcast with, and that is, can you tell everybody out there a little bit about your upbringing, your education, and your professional background?
I did not grow up around airplanes, nor did I have this passion for aviation that I do now. I grew up in Richmond, California. And if you know anything about Richmond, the school district is just very underprivileged. I remember going to school, substitute teachers were the norm. And usually the lifespan of these substitute teachers would go on from anywhere from 3 to 5 days. Then we'd get a new teacher. We couldn't take books at home just because the school district didn't have 2 copies, one set to keep at school, one set to take home. Most of my friends were in gangs, others dropped out. That was where I grew up. And how I got into aviation, it was all, I don't know what you want to call it. I call it fate, but my only exposure to aviation was aircraft accidents on CNN. And I just remember one day looking over to my mom and saying, "Mom, aviation is so scary. I don't know how people do it, but I hope I never have to fly in an airplane ever." And then you fast forward to when I graduated from high school. I was thinking of going to college, and my family, they were just all so very proud of how I was able to bring my education around, being raised in Richmond, and then, bringing my grades around to a point where I got a scholarship. So my parents, they bought me an airline ticket for me to fly from California, which is where I was raised, to Florida to visit some family. And I just remember going to the airport. I was traveling by myself. I didn't know what a terminal was. I didn't know what gates were. And I took my seat and I kept thinking to myself, "My God, what am I doing? Aviation's so scary. I'm sure when I sit in this airplane, the plane is going to take off and it's going to be this roller coaster effect all the way to Florida." And to my surprise, when the aircraft did take off, it was just beautiful. I mean, the wheels, it was like kissing the ground as it came up into the air. And the aircraft just started to elevate and accelerate. And I just remember sitting in my seat thinking, my whole life I grew up thinking aviation was so scary, but I'm sitting here in my seat and I'm just completely enchanted by this experience. And for the next 6 hours, I thought to myself, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to fly.
I guess that would be what Oprah always refers to as like an aha moment, right? That was what kind of flipped the switch for you at that point then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of people, it's funny, the airline travel, we take it for granted, but that's what inspired me to become a pilot, was sitting in the back of a Delta Airlines flight, scared to death. But, as soon as I experienced aviation, it was just magical.
And it's funny you mention that, because that's really similar to Amelia and Amelia Earhart, who is obviously the centerpiece of our project. She, when she first saw her first plane, she didn't really think much of it. It wasn't a big deal to her. But when she was taken up in her first plane, and she famously said, "When I got 200 feet off the ground, I knew I had to fly." It was almost like a switch flip for her as well. So it's really similar, more modern for you, really, essentially. Now, I have to ask, because I ask every project guest this, do you have any early recollections of Amelia Earhart? Do you remember like the most, the earliest time that you heard about her name or you heard about her story?
I did. So I did read about her when I was in middle school. And I remember coming across her name thinking, wow, women fly. Like that was just something that was very new to me. And then when I heard about everything that had happened to her during her around the world trip, it just made this conclusion in my head that aviation is scary. And, once, of course, when I got into aviation and I started to fly and learn about Amelia Earhart, what she did, it even through my hard times when I would go through flight training, I kept thinking about her. And I thought, man, what a brave woman. She was fearless and very adventurous. And oftentimes I would look back to Amelia Earhart's quotes just to give me some inspiration to keep me going. So yeah, I did hear about her, but back then, to me, aviation was really scary. So her story kind of frightened me a little bit.
Did you have any specific role models growing up when you started getting that drive for aviation and wanting to do what you were doing? I know we talked a little bit about Earhart, but did you have anybody else specifically that you kind of looked up to or kind of looked at their example to?
Amelia Earhart was a very big one. That's one of the most common female aviators that you often hear about. Charles Lindbergh was a very big inspiration. I mean, back in that time, to fly across the Atlantic Ocean, especially given his aircraft in that day and age, that was also very inspiring. And then once when I started to get into aviation, I read about you know, Wiley Post, the first person who successfully flew around the world, and, you know, how he got started into, you know, this adventure around the world. That's very interesting. And if you ever have any time, I highly recommend looking into it. But for me, what really, you know, it just redefined me was reading about Geraldine Mock, Jerry Mock, who is a great inspiration to me. She's a female aviator who back in 1964 flew a Cessna 180 around the world. And I don't know what it was about Jerry. I grew up thinking that I was going to be a housewife and that I was going to get married at a young age and that I was going to follow the footsteps of my mother and generations before her. So reading about Jerry, who was a housewife, who, you know, one day after making dinner told her husband, I want to fly around the world. You know, to me, that was just such a big jump and a leap of faith, you know, when I had read about her. So she really resonated with me. And of course, you know, I had the opportunity to meet with her too before she passed away. But yeah, I mean, of course, Amelia Earhart, she was probably one of the very, well, she was the very first female aviator that I had heard about. But Charles Lindbergh and then, of course, Jerry Mock were very inspirational to me.
Yeah, you can't get much better than those examples for sure. Now, let's get into it a little bit. Just this past year, 2017, you completed an ambitious world flight that officially made you the youngest woman to ever fly around the world in a single engine aircraft.
Right.
So obviously that's a huge deal. But for you, it wasn't just really the flight for flying's sake. You had a very specific kind of mission involved in mind in that. Can you tell everybody about that mission?
What I wanted to do was take advantage of, you know, setting this world record. And so for me, because I come from this very humbling background, and that the fact that I'm very lucky to be doing something that I love, which is flying, it was important for me to send a message out during this around the world flight. I mean, I thought, you know, the impact, the reach that this is going to have, this around the world flight is global. And I need to do something where I bring awareness to kids around the world of something that I feel passionate about. And for me, that was STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And the reason why I feel so passionate about the STEM careers is that, you know, growing up, I was not the best student. I, you know, by no means. But once I started to apply myself and really break down the STEM fields, I surprisingly enjoyed it a lot. And, you know, oftentimes we think, well, you have to be super smart to pursue engineering or to be good in math. But the truth is you don't. You just have to break it down into terms, you know, one step at a time and really look at these careers with just a new set of eyes and not be so intimidated or afraid. And so I thought, you know, people see this Afghani girl flying around the world by herself and she's promoting STEM. Maybe this is something I should look into.
Let's discuss Dream Soar. But before we get into the evolution of that, let's discuss how it all started for you. And that was at Embry-Riddle, where you started the Women's Ambassador Program, which was an initiative that seek to, and this is off the site, but this is an initiative that seek to mentor and support young women that were pursuing an education in aviation and engineering. It was kind of like the foundation for what Dream Soar would become. Can you discuss the importance of that startup and the role that it played in what would eventually become the nonprofit you have now?
Absolutely. So as a student at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, I was sitting in on a meeting that was hosted by the university president at the time, Dr. John Johnson. And at this meeting, the discussion or the topics that were being discussed was the fact that there's a need for more women to get into STEM and aviation career fields. And what was Embry-Riddle going to do to kind of bring up those numbers to kind of fulfill that need? And, you know, I'm sitting there as a student, very privileged to be amongst professors and the administration of the university. And it just came to me. I thought to myself, you know, I have five sisters, so six girls in one home. And I'm the second oldest. So my older sister, she never had the opportunity to go to college. But with me, you know, pursuing aviation, going to college to get a bachelor's degree at the time, I felt very empowered. And I kept thinking, well, what worked for me and what worked for my sisters? And what that was someone sat down with me and said, okay, Shasta, you want to go to college, you want to pursue this career in aviation, these are the steps. And really, it was a mentorship, more so a sisterhood that was provided to me by the person who kind of guided me into college. And I kept thinking about that experience, and I thought, you know what? Young girls, when you think about it, when they get out of high school, they're still very unsure of a lot of things. And to make a commitment to aviation or aerospace, it could be very intimidating because, again, it's a male-dominated industry. And also, it's very expensive. So you know, these were just things that I observed from my experience. So I just remember that day at this meeting that was hosted by the university president. I went home and I drafted up a proposal. And basically what it was is this idea of current Embry-Riddle students mentoring and providing a sisterhood to the incoming freshman female students and building that bond and really, you know, figuring out what are these students' reservations? How can, you know, the current students, these ambassadors, be the liaison to the university and talk about what the university could be doing to help these girls get into, to enroll at Embry-Riddle. This whole idea, you know, became the Women's Ambassadors Program. And I remember taking this proposal. I didn't have the guts to walk up to the president of the university and give it to him, but I gave it to his wife. And I said, hey, you know, I have this idea, the Women's Ambassadors Program, if you don't mind looking over it and sharing it with your husband, who's, of course, the university president. And within a week, I heard back. The president wanted to meet with me. And, you know, it took a few months to kind of form this whole program, which is now the Women's Ambassadors Program. And what I did is I helped found that organization at the university. I managed it for 2 years. And at the end of 2 years, the female enrollment for aviation and aerospace education at Embry-Riddle, those degree programs, the enrollment went from 13% to 22% in the course of 2 years. And when I saw that big jump, I thought, wow, this is incredible. And that's how I think the seed was planted for this flight around the world to try to take that, those learning lessons, that concept, and apply it to this around the world project.
Now, let's start with the origin of the name Dream Soar. Can you tell us how that name came about and then what that name really personally means to you?
Sure. So, you know, Dream Soar, we're a 501c3 nonprofit organization. There's a huge team, you know, behind me working on our mission of inspiring the next generation. And when the organization was coming together, I remember I lived very close to the Daytona Beach International Airport, and I was driving home, and there were planes taking off left and right, and there's this beautiful sunset. And I kept thinking, you know, what do I want to name this nonprofit organization? And my whole career in aviation has been one dream after another coming true. And so I thought, well, Dream Soar, you know, that it just, to me, it just made sense. And so I wanted for people, when they would read about us, just to have that idea that dreams do soar as they're reading about what we're doing or looking into STEM. Because it starts with a dream. And if you put enough hard work into it and get the right people involved, your dreams can soar.
That's very poetic. And what I want to ask is really, and I know you touched on it earlier, but why STEM for you? Let's break down just how important STEM is into, you know, really to today's youth, and why it's so crucial for us to get as many young folks excited and involved in STEM-centric careers.
So if you look at the future, where we're going, it's definitely in the STEM careers. You know, technology is booming now more than ever, with everything that we have going on with, you know, space travel, engineering is very critical. And the thing with math is that, you know, oftentimes people think, well, what is math? It's just, you know, a series of equations, but it's through math that, you know, I'm able to fly an aircraft across the Atlantic Ocean and know that I have enough fuel to get to the other side. I mean, math is everywhere. And then, of course, science as well. I mean, these are career fields that are very exciting. And the problem that we are faced with is that STEM fields, continuously, the numbers just decline of people interested in these fields. So, you know, once when I got into aviation, it was a surprise to me to see how much STEM was involved in aviation. And again, I said, once I broke it down, it made a lot more sense. When I related it to something that I love doing, which is flying, all of a sudden STEM didn't seem so scary. So there's a need out there to get the next generation more involved into STEM careers. And, you know, I think it's important for the development of our society, of our country, to fill these STEM jobs so that we can keep progressing forward.
You know, it's funny, we were out in Los Angeles probably earlier last year, and we were actually attending a lecture by Dr. Anita Sengupta, who's also a project guest, and she's the rocket scientist at JPL, and she her team designed the supersonic parachute for the Curiosity rover for Mars, and she's just this really super accomplished, incredible woman. And she showed us this photo of, they were testing out, I think in Palm Desert or something, they were testing the simulating, the atmosphere of Mars for the parachute. And they took this photo, and it's like her and like 25 dudes. And she was telling us, she goes, look, you know, with when it comes to women in careers like this, we're getting there on medical, we're getting there on law, but we desperately need engineer. We desperately need mathematics. We desperately need aviation, aerospace. It's really important. And I saw that photo, and I thought that photo kind of hit me hard. I was, when I looked at it, I thought, man, that's pretty incredible. Just her. And then just 25 dudes, and that was it. It was just the craziest thing to see something like that. The ratio is just incredible.
It is, and when you think about nowadays, how, you know, we've progressed so much in our society, it needs to be natural that you see a picture with, you know, at least a healthy amount of both male and females. And you know, even when I got into aviation, the fact that it was a very male-dominated industry, you know, that's not fun. You know, I wanted to have girlfriends. I wanted to have, you know, just relationships with the people in my career field. And it was difficult to find that sisterhood, especially for someone who has five sisters. You know, it was important. So, you know, just having a healthy balance, a diverse balance of, you know, both genders, it's just so important. It really is.
You know, if we circle back to Amelia Earhart for a moment, because a lot of people might ask, you know, and this is an interesting question, what does Amelia Earhart have to do with modern day STEM? And it's funny, because we were thinking about that a couple of weeks ago, and my son, who is 8, kind of gave me this revelation. We were kind of talking about what she used to do at Purdue University. She was a career consultant for women at Purdue University. And what she would do at Purdue is she would push for women to get into aviation careers, and she would push for them to get into science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. That's what she was doing back in the 30s. And my son told me, he said, well, isn't that kind of what STEM is? That's exactly what it is, right? And I just kind of like, it's just like, oh my God, she was unbeknownst to her, she was an early pioneer in what would become modern day STEM. And she had no idea. This was just something that she passionately pursued. And I wanted to ask you, what does someone like Amelia Earhart's impact on modern day STEM, like, what is that? And you know, she was talking about this when no one really was, back in the 30s, when women, like you said earlier, were expected to just marry and have kids and maybe get a degree, but that was really about it.
Right. Well, you know, I think, you know, Amelia Earhart, she, in history for women, she's played such an important role. And when you think about, you know, STEM fields, when you have someone like Amelia Earhart, who, you know, back then she was this aviator, very adventurous, you know, almost like a daredevil, for someone like her to talk about STEM careers, especially to young girls, you know, it just makes it more realistic, you know, whereas if you had just a random person standing there who, you know, maybe is not in a very exciting, career field, talking about it might not be as enticing. So I think the fact that she was this very strong woman who loved aviation, who was going out there setting records every time that she sat in an airplane, you know, her being an advocate really opened the idea that, you know, women can be in these fields. And again, this was so many years ago. So I think that's one way that just comes to my head, how she contributed is just, you know, doing what she loved and also promoting these careers to universities and students.
Let me ask you this. When you're, and this is a question that people have actually asked me to ask you, when you're flying around the world and you have, obviously you have a lot of time to reflect because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of quiet time. It's just you, the airplane and the sky, really. What do you think about?
Oh my gosh. You know, for me, it was, I think one of the biggest things that I kept thinking about were the outreach events that I had experienced around the world. And my longer flights were towards the South Pacific region. So, you know, it was nice because that was towards the end of my flights, the end of the global flight. So sitting there and thinking about, you know, the kids that I had met, I met with 3,000 kids face to face from 22 different countries. You know, their questions, their reaction to seeing the plane, you know, their excitement. Some of these kids had never met a female pilot before, and others had never touched an airplane before. So to be the person to make this connection with these kids from all over the world to aviation and STEM, I felt very honored and privileged. I thought, you know, the fact that I get to be the person to do this is phenomenal. So when I would have downtime, that's what I would think about is the kids that I had met already wherever I was around the world and the kids that I were going to meet in the future.
You know, I asked this question of Abby when she was on the show, and I'll ask it to you now because I think it's really relevant. What you just talked about was a great segue into it. You have an immense responsibility on your shoulders because so many young people look at you and they see hope. And to me, you are, really through their eyes, you are like the physical embodiment of what hope is to them. And you just touched on it because they had never seen an airplane. They never touched an airplane. They never seen a female pilot. I can't put myself in your shoes. I can't even fathom that. How can you put that aspect of your journey into words? I mean, what does that mean to you?
It's a responsibility that I take with a lot of gratitude. And the fact that I could be hope for someone, I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. And here's the thing, all that I'm doing is I'm just doing what I love. When you really love something and you're very passionate about it, and you just have, you know, you have confidence in yourself, you have confidence in your dreams, you'd be amazed at how much that impacts the people around you. And in this case, people, young kids around the world.
When you were making history and you're flying around the world, did you, in your wildest dreams, ever imagine that this life you're living right now would be the outcome of that flight?
No, not at all. You know, when I took off to fly around the world, you know, I had spent 3 years of my life planning the trip, and this was 3 years of, you know, never really going on vacation, never spending a dollar on something that I didn't need because everything had to be saved for the trip. A lot of sacrifices. You know, I was kind of living the college student life, but I was, you know, what I was doing was going around to different trade shows, talking about the trip. So for me, it was just so, I was so focused on the trip, you know, getting ready to take off. This is what we'd like to do. So when I went on the trip, that was an experience of itself. And when I came back, I thought, wow, you know, I don't need to go to NBAA to try to speak with sponsors. Like now I get to go there and talk about this experience. I mean, I knew that my life would change, but I just didn't know that it would change this much.
We're going to get into that in just a little bit, but I want to ask you just a very blunt question because I know we've talked about STEM a lot in this conversation, but speaking of aviation specifically, how important is it from your standpoint for women to fly?
Oh my goodness. It's critical. You know, you think about how much aviation has progressed since the dawn of aviation, and you think about a lot of, you know, just the way that we do things, the way we operate an airplane, the way, you know, even if you look at the airline industry, how it's all set up, this was predominantly men getting together and you know, trading these this information and coming up with a process. Now imagine if women were included, you know, in these thought processes or you know, just how an engine was originally put together, how it was designed. I mean, just imagine how more ahead aviation could possibly be. And it's my strong belief that if women were more involved, I think we would be, aviation would be a lot more developed than what it is today. And you know, it just, it's just, it's so important. You, even for me as an aviator, I didn't want to be in the boys club. You know, I wanted to be in a club where you could just enjoy these memories with, you know, several people, not just a specific certain type of people, which in this case are men. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just having a healthy work environment is important, and having several people with different backgrounds, it's just, it's important for the development of anything.
I think, you know, it's interesting. I think personally that yourself and Abby are like the hardest working women in STEM because you guys just keep going. Why for you is it important to keep, and this is a really a kind of an important question to ask because we have a lot of really young people listen to the show and they look up to folks we have on the show like yourself. And I want them to really hear this answer. Why is it important for you to keep grinding in the way that you do? Most people would just kind of rest on their achievements, sit back, take it easy for a while, take some time off, whatever. For you, you just get busier and busier and busier. It's just like tunnel vision. Why is that important for you?
Well, I feel like right now there's momentum, and working off of this momentum is important. The energy that's being created, you know, after this around the world flight, it, you know, you just, you want to keep that going. But when you think about really the figures of, you know, people who are in the STEM fields, it is low. And, you know, it would be nice to take a break right now and say, hey, you know, I mean, I honestly think I couldn't last after a week. But I feel like I have a sense of duty to go out there and continue to fight the good fight until I really feel like I've given it my all. And by sharing the amazing career fields in STEM and the need for it, I feel like it's going to be the domino effect. The more people that I reach, the more that the word's going to get out there. But what I want is, you know, I have a niece now, and I think about the possibilities of what she's going to do when she grows up. And even though if she may not pursue a career in STEM, you know, I feel like it's my generation's responsibility to at least give her the option that if she wants to pursue a STEM field, that she's not going to be the only girl in those fields, and that she has an understanding that these are field, career fields that are critical, and she could be a part of that, you know, a part of the STEM movement. And so I feel like I have a sense of duty. I really do.
Now, this is something I think is interesting. Some people, you know, they collect baseball cards, they might collect comic books, they might collect some shoes or something, watches, whatever, but not you. You collect awards. And I want to talk about that because I know you're very humble. I know that. I know that of you very much. But for the folks out there that are listening to this podcast right now, and in the event you want to check out her qualifications, let me just take the liberty of providing you with some of Shasta's qualifications. So far, because this is remarkable, so far you have accomplished and you've been awarded. The accomplishments are you're the youngest woman to fly solo around the world in a single engine aircraft. Of course, we've talked about that and highlighted that. You are a record. You're a record certified by the National Aeronautic Association for speed over recognized course for the flight leg from Honolulu, Hawaii to Oakland, which is particularly interesting because that's an Earhart flight during your solo circumnavigation. You're Afghanistan's first certified civilian female pilot. Of course, you're the founder of Dream Soar, nonprofit 501c3, focusing on STEM. You're also the founder of the Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University Women's Master Program that we talked about earlier. You are the recipient of the 2018 Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum's Trophy for Current Achievement. You were the recipient of the National Aeronautic Association's 2017 Catherine and Marjorie Stinson Trophy. Your name was recently inscribed to the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum's Wall of Honor. And lastly, and this is my favorite one, you were named as the ambassador of peace for Afghanistan. Any thoughts on any of that?
You know, if the people who are close to me, you know, I have to say, I have never read an article about myself. When these videos come out, I never listen to it. And I think it's very important. Yes, I'm getting all of these awards, and it's a great feeling. But at the end of the day, what is this award doing? You know, for me, I know it's recognizing people who are doing a lot of great work, and I'm amongst that. But for me, I feel like there's so much more to do, and I have to keep going. It's amazing to have these awards. I mean, they're all around. You know, I have it in my room at home, and I keep thinking, this is great, but there's so much more to do, and I intend to do a lot more. So yeah, I mean, it's tough. I just don't let it get to my head, because in the grand scheme of things, I followed my dreams. I was very privileged to have this opportunity, but I need to do more. I want to do more.
And that's a great segue into the last couple of questions we have for tonight. And really, it's a question I always ask about with everybody is, and it really talks about impact and legacy. And that's huge around these parts here. The first question that was about you, what do you want your legacy and that of Dream Store to be?
What I'll share is in the future, you know, the first phase of Dream Store was the global flight around the world. And what I'd like to do in phase two is the thing that I find myself most passionate about is when you look at countries like Afghanistan, where there's a lot of traditions, people are very set in their ways. And the women, you know, unfortunately, they're not very educated. And most of them are oppressed. You know, how do you tackle a country like this where you want to bring STEM, where you want to bring education into these countries? And it's my strong belief that you have to start with women, because the women are the ones who are raising the next generation. They're the ones who's going to teach their sons and daughters that, you know, you are able to do these things. You can pursue STEM. You can, you know, be educated or bring change to your country. So if you start with the women, I feel like that's a very key solution for, you know, in countries like Afghanistan, when you want to bring change into these countries. So the next big project, and this is what I hope will be my legacy, is starting a STEM school in Kabul, Afghanistan, where it's an all-girls school. And after school, these kids meet, you know, where we're thinking of is very close to the Kabul International Airport, where, you know, Afghanistan, I believe, is the third richest country in resources, natural resources. So if they were to use those natural resources from their own backyard and apply STEM to a project that basically have the girls work on a project that is going to serve these countries, even if we're not in the country, I think is very important. And the projects that they work on is going to empower these young girls. It's going to give them confidence. It's going to allow them to exercise education. And then ultimately, what I'd like to do is incorporate a flight training program with these schools. So strategically, we'd like them to be very close to the airport. But, you know, just education is so important. I grew up not realizing it, and I grew up in a very underprivileged school district. But once I found my connection to education, the future, you know, that was something very valuable and very empowering to me. And I can only imagine if we were to provide these opportunities of education to kids around the world, that these countries would transform within time. So that's what I'm hoping my legacy is going to be, is providing educational opportunities to kids around the world.
And secondly, tying into that, in your personal opinion, what is the legacy of Amelia Earhart going? This is the 81st anniversary of the disappearance of her and Fred Noonan. What is that legacy to you personally, just on a personal level?
It's women empowerment. I mean, I think of Amelia Earhart, the way she carried herself. You know, back then, aviation, there were just simply not that many women flying. But the fact that she had paved that way for women like Jerry Mock, like me, to fly around the world. Oftentimes when I came across very difficult and challenging moments around the world, I thought if Amelia Earhart could do it, you know, way back when, I should have no problem in getting around the world. So for me, she just empowers me so much. And on a personal note, it's women empowerment all the way.
Shasta, where can folks find you online and follow your journey specifically, and where can they find Dream Store?
So Dream Store, I know I talked a lot about me, but again, we are a team of volunteers. We have the Dream Team which consists of a group of college students that are working on real life projects for the organization. And we also have a team of advisors, a team, of course, our board of directors. But if you want to learn about the Global Flight, about me, about the organization, the Dream Team, it's all under dreamsoar.org. And also, too, we're on social media, Twitter, Facebook, I mean, you name it, Instagram. Dream Soar has a page, and then I have my personal page, just because I don't want to bore the Dream Soar followers with my Starbucks coffee in the morning. So, but yeah, we're on social media, and the website is dreamsoar.org, dreamsoar.org.
Shasta, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. Thank you so much for being officially a Chasing Earhart Project guest.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I can't thank you all enough for everything that you guys are doing. Keep up the great work.
I'm Chris Williamson, and you've been listening to the Chasing Earhart podcast. Please visit our website, chasingearhart.com, for all of our shows, project news, and information on this summer's Chasing Earhart the Discussion Panel in Atchison, Kansas. You can follow the project online using the hashtag @ChasingEarhart. If you haven't yet, head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week when we sit down with author and project guest Candace Fleming. Thanks for listening.